Welcome to We Grow California with your hosts, Darcy Villery
and Darcy Burke,
a safe space to discuss water, agriculture, and what makes California grow.
We have guests from those who just drink water to those that make water policy, all passionate about the water issues that face all Californians today.
Join the conversation by liking, subscribing, sending in your questions, and submitting your request to be our guest. Let's get this conversation started.
Welcome, everybody. Today, we're going to talk about Solve the Water Crisis. And Greg Thomas from Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District is joining us today. And Darcy, if you remember, we've had some other guests on talking about trying to fix our vast problems in water in California, including Ed Ring from More Water Now or Joe DeBosque, The Fight for Water Continues. So now we're excited to welcome Greg Thomas, who is an engineer by profession, former lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps, and runs a large urban water retail and wastewater agency. So welcome in, Greg.
Thank you, Darcy and Darcy. Pleasure to be here.
So in all transparency, as we've stated in other episodes, I am the president currently of Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District, and Greg is our general manager, so we're not trying to mix different things and hide anything. But Greg is also very involved in this other organization, Solve the Water Crisis, and I thought it was important enough to bring forward so that everybody can see that those that really know what they're doing in water management aren't just sitting back doing nothing. So why don't you tell our audience, Greg, a little bit about what the Solve the Water Crisis is, how you got involved, and what the goals of the organization are?
Yeah, thanks, Darcy. So Water Crisis really came out of a grassroots effort from the general manager's aspects. As you see what's going on in the water industry across the state, with the drought and the ups and downs, you know, a wet year, dry years, water going under the Golden Gate Bridge, not being captured. And then, there's aspects of you need to conserve to get us over this most recent hurdle of a drought. So Craig Miller, Western Municipal Water District general manager, and a few others were sitting around, you know, over a cup of coffee, kind of saying, hey, what do we need to do? We really need to get out. So sort of formed a coalition of more general managers at the time of saying, hey, what can we do to educate people? It's really about educating. We don't necessarily advocate, but you look at what's going on up and down the state. And we have general managers from the north and the south. So this isn't a, oh, you need more water meters down in the south or the north kind of competition. This is seriously saying, you know, we have a crisis out there in water management. And it's really, you can almost say in some cases, again, there's a lot of great people in DWR and the state board and across, but, you know, sometimes the mismanagement of those water resources and storage. So you look at, again, educating about when we have these changing climate conditions, they're saying, you know, a 10% reduction by 2040 in the amount of precipitation. In less snowpack, we're going to get more rain, and yet you're going to have these massive rains like we had in December. And what is it, Darcy? 4 to 6 million acre feet of water go out under the Golden Gate Bridge at that time. And right now we have reservoirs. How much?
5.8 million.
You're right. So you, and you look and go, why didn't we capture that? Because we have a lot of reservoirs that are empty right now. And so, it's really about educating about the issues of needing more storage. The Proposition 1 was passed about 8 years ago, 7 years ago, and allocated almost $3 billion for additional storage. Why aren't we building those sites, reservoirs, and storage? Talking about our conveyance, the State Water Project, Central Valley Project, which is a federal, but more on the State Water Project system, which comes out of Lake Oroville, 80 years old. And so given the changing times and the climactic conditions, it's time to improve our conveyance. So those are some of the things we're looking at. New supplies, they're saying we need 17 million acre feet of additional water. You look at California's growth over the last, 25% from 30 to 40 million and get how many years, we need to support all that economy. So we're looking at new supply, the governor's plan kind of looks at about 7 million of that. So where's the other 10 going to come from? And then just regulatory certainty. There's so many changes in the regulatory environment, whether it's new emerging constituents of concern, such as PFAS, et cetera. But just the whole environmental aspects of getting projects approved are just...
Hey, Greg, can you fill us in? Because Darcy and I have talked about it a little bit, but I don't think, at least individually, but I don't think we've ever necessarily brought it up too much on the podcast. What is PFAS, and with the drought that is currently going on, how has that made it, I assume, the situation worse, or how has it made the reservoirs down in Southern California, what the impact's been to your customers,
well,
that kind of thing?
Yeah, hey, a good question. I'll probably butcher it. Perfluoroalkylene something. It's a nice chemical name. I'm a mechanical engineer guy, and I'm not a chemist, but I should know. So, you know, we use a lot of acronyms, but that's a good question. You know, for overall storage of the big facilities, the Diamond Valley Lake, the Lake Gorbils up north, the Lake Shastas, et cetera, that's more water storage. The PFAS really starts to hit when you're in your groundwater systems, your wells that may be contaminated, or, you know, you have PFAS in the system.
So
we
Greg,
didn't put it there. The water.
I'm going to stop you for a minute and just kind of tell people what it is. Forget the technical name. So it is a man-made chemical.
What does it do?
It's a man-made chemical that is just about everywhere. So if you've ever used a nonstick cookware pan, that nonstick is out of PFAS and PFOA. There are 22 currently chemical compounds in this family that are looking to be regulated. It was in firefighting foam, especially on military bases. It is anything waterproof, whether it's your snow pants for snowboarding, if it's your carpet, if it's in the air. So the concentration of this chemical compound in all of its, I think there's 400 and something, or maybe there's even more different identifiable elements of this, it's everywhere. So what happened was the legislator picked a random number and said, this is what it's going to be, right? Without, and I'm not going to get into the political part of this, a lot of health studies, which is how the EPA sets maximum contaminant levels. Our state decides that they know better because you're elected, you then know water quality. So this has entered into the water system. As Greg pointed out, you find it predominantly in groundwater systems. However, we're fortunate enough at Elsinore Valley to have it in our primary drinking water reservoir, which makes up about 10% of our service area, or 10% of our water supply to our service area. So from there, Greg, I'll let you take it back.
Thanks. That's a great, We as water managers or water wonks kind of get into the details and forget about the bigger picture. So that's an excellent explanation of it, Darcy. So we have to treat it then. So that really impacts your abilities, as Darcy says. We're probably one of the only agencies that has a surface water treatment facility, treatment plant. And we have PFAS in our lake that required us to not be able to operate our water treatment plant. But we have it in our groundwater well. So what that does is when you have shortages or when you have constraint supplies, imported water being 5% allocation from the state water project, which means we have to be more efficient, be more conservation, but rely on more local sources. But when you have a PFAS component in your well, you may have to take that well off, or you may have to blend it with another well. And so it does limit your abilities to meet your demand. And it puts an additional challenge on water agencies to say, hey, I'm, 60% imported. Well, that's being constrained. I'll just make it up with my local resources. Oh, can't do that. So then you have to really manage that. And there's a huge cost to that, too, that treatment. So that's something that we battle.
So, Greg, this is not our first drought or first rodeo, as they say. So why solve the water crisis now? And what's different now?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's just the fact that when you look at 5 years or from 2015 to now, this ups and downs in the water world, supply predominantly and all the changes to it, and the inaction from the state level, I think just kind of acted, got us to act and say, hey, we as water managers, we have to look out not only just for tomorrow, next year, 2 years from now, we got to look out multiple generational. We got to look out 10, 20, 30 years. That's what we do. And our boards are, heavily involved in that, saying, hey, Well, how do we do this affordably with a good value and meets all requirements? And, you know, you staff guys, folks, go out and do this stuff. So it just kind of got to the roast to the top that we're not seeing what we need. Kind of going back to Prop 1, it, you know, some of the projects that were in Proposition 1 passed by the voters years ago were part of the governor's, you know, included in the governor's new water plan that he put out in August. And glad to see there is a plan. There's some good things in it. But if we're not addressing it now, we're really educating the legislature and the business community, the farmers, everybody up and down. I mean, water is vital to life. I mean, there's nothing more, well, air, of course, but that's free, basically. But there's nothing more vital to life than water. And yet, I think water's been somewhat hijacked by certain groups that it's just making it extremely difficult for us to do what we need to do. We're all environmentalists. I'm not trying to throw that. But we're all environmentalists. We all want a beautiful environment. We all want to protect these resources, you know, whether it's fish, birds, bugs, bunnies, you know, trees, people.
Thank
you know, all
for
of that.
People.
We all have to be here and work together and do that. So, but I think
since you brought it up, Craig, can I ask? So you brought up the water plan, the governor's water plan. You said there were good things in it, and I assume there are things you also were not happy with. Do you want to hit me with one of each and give us what is the thing you thought was great and what's the thing you're like, what is this even doing in here?
You know, I think it's good that he's recognizing that, you know, when you, you know, I'll use my military background, but you go to war, you use every tool, you know, howitzers, aircraft, you know, infantry, mm-hmm. et cetera. You need it all. And I think that was a good thing that I saw in the plan was that identifying that, you know, we need to look at desalination. We need to look at water reuse. We need to look at conservation. You can't conserve your way out of these things. It's just because they're asking the 10% of the population. Well, water is 50% environment, about 40% ag, 10% urban. That's kind of how, when you look at the water usage across the state, you're asking the 10% to try to conserve your way, and it's not going to happen. So you really need everything you possibly can for that, for figuring out how we're going to get that 17 million. It's storage, it's desalination, whether it's brackish ocean desalination. It's definitely, we use everybody in Southern California reuses their wastewater. You know, we put it in Lake Elsinore right now as far as our district to help keep the health of that lake alive. But some of our sister agencies are using it for, you know, we use it for irrigation, agriculture, et cetera. And we're going to have it as a drinking water source. So that's where a lot of us are moving to.
So I want to stop you right there for just a moment, Greg, because there's also conversation, obviously, from wastewater plants up and down the state that dump their effluent into like the Sacramento River or the San Francisco Bay. And I want you to tell, not too technical, the difference between the water that's being dumped in those waterways and the water that Elsinore Valley provides to Lake Elsinore, because they're night and day.
Yeah, so we treat ours to a little bit of, it's almost drinking water quality. There's a few engineering type systems we can put on the tail end of our water reclamation facilities that would make it drinking water. Whether we potentially put it in the ground like Orange County does, they recycle, put it in the ground, and then pull it back out further downrange. And the earth is a natural filter. So in those regards, or completely doing it where you can directly put it into the pipes, adding additional mechanical or engineering methods to provide purity to the water system. So that's where we're at. And a lot of what Darcy was mentioning up north, it's not treated to that high a standard. And so you can only need like secondary or maybe tertiary in some things, but not. So it goes into the water and basically it's diluted
in theory, it's the solution to their pollution.
Yeah. When there's a ton of water flowing through the system, it's like anything else, right? It works, but clearly nobody up there was planning for this much drought to hit. And I think the interesting part about it is, if you think about it, it's like, well, the Sac Valley farmers did not get their water, which you know, and so they fallowed, and so there was not water flowing through that system. and the municipal sources were not prepared for the farmers not getting their allocation. If you were to think about it, that because this is the first time that's ever happened for the Sac Valley guys to get this heavy a cut, and their water treatment plants weren't ready for it up north, basically, right?
Is that fair?
I mean, does that make sense?
Go, Greg.
Go ahead, Darcy.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Water treatment, as far as the raw water coming in, and if it's a lot less, then yeah, the water treatment plants are designed. We design everything, wastewater or water, for a certain type of peaking load, a certain constant flow loading that makes it a lot more efficient when you're cutting it off than definitely on the water treatment side. But on the sewer or water reclamation facility side, that's when, again, less water, it makes it a little more challenging to meet those water discharge requirements. So that's kind of what some of the good things about the plan is looking at other things.
What's the thing you have an issue with the plan, or something you would take issue with?
I think if I was, you know, king for a day, as they say, or queen for a day, or governor for a day.
Yeah,
in this case, in the plan, you know, I don't know if Governor Newsom's listening or his people are, but I think I would have pushed more CEQA reform. Again, classic example, you can get a SoFi stadium built by CEQA waivers, but you can't get something that's so vital to the health of the environment, agriculture, and people, and you have to go through these laborious CEQA things. So I think my magic wand would be CEQA reform and more money. We had a $97 billion surplus this year. Again, by certain regulations, half of that goes towards general fund or specific things, education, et cetera. But you basically have $50 billion. We're talking that this is so critical, and yet we're only allocating an additional, $2 or $3 billion on top of what was approved by the voters, Proposition 1. And it costs about $2 billion to build a reservoir. So, you're not getting that much out of that. So I would have probably put at least a lot more billions, into this situation, because it doesn't matter what you do, you need water. And if you don't have it, this state's going to dry up, and, you know, the farmers are feeling it. I mean, farmers are, I think, one of the most efficient business types in the world. I mean, they got it down. You guys have got it down to an nth degree on the laser leveling and all those, you're measuring your soil thing. I'm here in Temecula, and it's talking to some of the vintners, the wine growers. You know, these guys have gotten rid of a lot of their fertilizers, and it's very scientific, and they're still producing the same amount or more. I mean, talk about the most efficient people out there, and yet we need food, and our food prices are increasing, yet you're fallowing 500,000 acres. That's a lot of food that we need to feed not only California, the United States, but the world. So those are some of the items I kind of would,
appreciate that. You know, and on the sequel that we spoke to, what was Rick's last name on the Doheniam?
Shintaku.
Yeah, Rick Shintaku about it. I mean, didn't he say it's taken, there's 17 years 18. Into the process. 18, sorry, 18. They're just now graduating from high school and still trying to figure out if they can get that plant going because of CEQA requirements. And I appreciate the concerns about CEQA, but I would like to think that after 18 years, they could get something done. You know, like, it seems like that's a crazy long process for something like that.
No, and that's where I say CEQA reform would be where I would probably really look at. And again, we protect the environment, but classic example, I mean, kind of going to Doheny, Huntington Beach had 15 years of trying to get a desal plant at Huntington Beach. Politics aside, it got canceled, but that's another thing by the Coastal Commission. So I mean, it's just CEQA reform. Just the Twin Tunnels was, Bay Delta fix. Twin Tunnels was originally under Governor Brown, and Governor Newsom changed it to single tunnel. Again, it's not necessarily more water; it's water reliability and being able to take it further up in the thing, and it actually helps the environment. But then tunnels that went through the environmental review process, very expensive, lengthy. All you're doing is changing the one tunnel, and they're making you go back from square one, basically. That's stupid. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
And you know, people should be up in arms about it. I know, you know, politics aside, people don't want it in the Bay Delta, et cetera, but, you know, project's a project. It just, and even when we're trying to do things, the amount of time and years it takes for us to get through the environmental review process.
Well, and I think people too up there don't fully appreciate things, not to dovetail off to the Bay Tunnel, because that's not what we're here to talk about. But it is in terms of how much water that goes into San Luis and it what it serves on the coast and what it serves in the valley and what it serves down in LA. It something has to be done, because like they said, one earthquake and suddenly the levees are gone.
Right.
And what are you going to do? I mean, I know it hasn't happened yet, but this is California. If you aren't worried about earthquakes, then you shouldn't be living in this state, you know? It's a real problem that could happen.
So, Darcy, we're about out of time. So I want to ask Greg one last question. So Solve the Water Crisis is a grassroots effort. And Darcy and I have been interviewing lots of people that have started grassroots efforts to deal with the water situation in California. So if the public or legislators or farmers or businesses want to help or they want to know information, how can they do that and where do they go?
Thank you. Go to solvethewatercrisis.com. And there's a lot of things. We've actually been really reaching out to the chambers, the business community, and it's really about you all. This is what it's for. It's not just urban. It's everybody. Without water, you know, we're not going to have an economy. So yeah, just go to solvethewatercrisis.com. And there's plenty. Just sign up. About 26 of us have kind of funded this coalition, but we're looking for supporters and sponsors. Send us your logo. Say, yep, you're on board. And you know, I think these are the voices that are really going to help make a change long term.
Well, thank you, Greg, for joining us today and sharing more information about Solve the Water Crisis. Darcy, I don't know if you have any final thoughts before we sign off.
No, thanks for coming on, Greg. It's been a great conversation.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Darcy Squared.
Thanks so much. Thank you for listening to another We Grow California episode and being a part of our community. Be sure to like, subscribe, submit your questions and guest requests at ecwaterpack.com/podcast. That's ecwaterpac.com/podcast today.